Hello and welcome to 10 Lessons Learned, where we talk to sages and gurus, leaders and luminaries from all over the world to dispense their wisdom for your career, business and life, to make the world a wiser place, lesson by lesson. My name is Robert Hossery and I'm your host for this episode. Today's guest is Troy Hadid. Troy was born in Trinidad and Tobago and has lived there the majority of his life. Today, he still calls the forested north coast of Trinidad his home and lives amongst a community of hummingbirds. I love that, a community of hummingbirds. I would love to live in a community of hummingbirds. He attended the University of Tampa in Florida and graduated with a degree in business. After that, Troy returned to Trinidad and opened Trinidad's first hemp store, which he ran for 8 years before starting a biofuel business and then finally nurturing a beautiful yoga studio and community known as One Yoga Trinidad. They have recently rebranded into beyondyogatv.com. I urge you to check that out. Troy has traveled the world in a ship. He's walked on foot across Costa Rica. He sat in silence for 10 days at a time. He spent time in absolute darkness and has dedicated the last 15 years of his life to the practice and teaching of yoga. He has recently completed his first book, Popcorn in My Pocket, Insightful Reflections for a Better You and a Better World. And that's scheduled to be released in 2023. Welcome, Troy. Thanks for being on the show today.
Yeah, thanks, Robert. It's an absolute pleasure and an honor to be here.
You have a very diverse background, if I can use that. You've done a lot of things many of us dream about. It must have given you a lot of experiences to fall back on and a lot of teachings that you're going to share with us today.
Yeah, you know, it's been quite a journey when I look at it. None of it was a coincidence, no part of it at all, you know. From my early childhood and all the circumstances that allowed me the privilege of these experiences, I think we all very, very much planned, you know, no coincidence involved at all.
All right, let's jump straight into it. Let me start this off by asking you one of our standard questions. Troy, if you had the opportunity, what would you tell your 30-year-old self?
You know, there's a quote I recently tattooed on my arm, and I wish I had come across it and understood it decades ago. And I don't even know who the author of the quote is, because every time I Google it or research it, I see an unknown author. So I can't even cite this author. But it's a reminder. It says, I have not come to teach. I have come to love, and love will teach. And I'll repeat that. It says, I have not come to teach. I have come to love, and love will teach. And I think a lot of the time, you know, we get so caught up in teaching or proving our point that we create separation and otherness, and we make people feel judged and disconnected. And I like to say that if we really want to create change in the world or create change in someone, we first have to understand their perspective and that go through their perspective to create that change. We can't try to force them through our perspective.
There's too many people in the world that will not understand what you just said, Troy.
Yeah.
There are too many people who want to force their perspective and their values on you. So I love that lesson because it actually means something to me. So that's actually very powerful. And I'll say to our audience, today's episode will be a little more philosophical than you may be used to, but please listen to these lessons and see how you can apply them into your daily life. Because what Troy is bringing to us today are very powerful lessons. So let's get started. Okay, Troy, lesson number one, do you disagree? Or are you avoiding the conversation?
Yeah. So, you know, this is so convenient that this is lesson number one, because, you know, it builds on what you just said. And very often our dismissal is actually our avoidance. And it's easy to look at a teaching or perspective or anything really and see if that does not apply to me. But it's important to ask the question, how does it apply? Because everything applies. Everything applies. And I remember, you know, a story that comes to me about this. It's, I remember one of my teachers once, her name was Sean Korn. She's such a phenomenal teacher. And I can't quote her words exactly because it would make her sound like really mean, but she's not. But I'll tell you how it landed for me. And how I interpreted her words was her telling me that I was wrong. I was the source of all the misalignment in the world. And that hit me hard because I knew I was trying my best for decades to live from a place of love and be in alignment. But what I wasn't looking at was all the areas of my life in which I was out of alignment. So I was conveniently looking at all the light, all the places in my life in which I was living from a place of love. I did not create the time and space in my own life to look at the areas of disconnect, the areas of misalignment, the areas in which I showed up from a place of judgment or greed or otherness or separation. And it's important that we ask that question, how does this apply to my life? Because our growth and transformation, Robert, lives in our disconnect and our misalignment. Our growth and transformation doesn't live in the places where we live from a place of light and love. You know, it lives in the darkness, and we have to look at that darkness.
That is very powerful. I mean, what I heard in my business brain translates it into business speak. You can only grow through your failures. You can only grow through learning what your mistakes are and becoming better at those things that you were not good at. And that's what I hear you say, that those areas of misalignment, those areas of disconnect in your life are the areas where you should improve. And as you improve, you will grow.
Yeah. But you have to see them first.
You have to see them. And that is the biggest challenge. It's a skill that everybody can develop if they want to. And everything, and I believe everything in your lessons coming up, all come back to self-awareness.
Yeah.
You must be able to look in the mirror and see the person looking back at you.
Yeah.
That is so important. You can't look in the mirror and just see what you think you want to see. That's a fantastic lesson. Look, I think that's great. And again, I'm going to try not to get too philosophical here because I can talk to you forever, Troy. I mean, I'm just on the same page as you. All right, let's move to lesson number two. Nurture a personal relationship with your God and allow others to nurture theirs. That seems pretty straightforward.
Yeah, isn't it? But we haven't done it. Decades, Robert. And this lesson is probably one of the closest to my heart because one of my friends and someone I teach with, he says to me, dude, every second word out of your mouth is either love or God. So if someone is not okay with the word God, then chances are they're not going to be very receptive to what I bring. But I'll say it like this, for decades, even centuries maybe, we have been told what God is, what God looks like, and what God wants of us. God was even given a gender. And for anyone who really connects to any aspect of God, we have to look at the historical wrongs and misalignments and oppression that have been done in the name of God. So for me, Robert, when somebody tells me they don't believe in God or they're an atheist, I understand. I completely understand why somebody would want not to associate with God. But I would urge someone not to allow history to rob us of that relationship to divinity, because it is our right. And it is the one thing that connects all of us, connects all of creation. And if we cannot relate to some aspect of divinity, call it God, call it whatever you like, if we cannot relate to it, then it feeds our separateness, our otherness. And from that, that to me is a source of all misalignment in the world. This narrative that we are separate, we are different, we are other. You know, it's so ironic that history, historically, most, I can't say all, most of the understandings of God are exclusive to one group of people or one group of understanding. They aren't inclusive. And that to me is the biggest red flag. God, divinity, whatever you want to call it, it's okay with me. It's your relationship to God. But it is inclusive. And I think historically, the problem with people being told what God is, what God looks like, and what God wants, is it blocks that personal relationship to God. And I believe that divinity communicates and speaks to every individual. But we just haven't been given the tools to sit and listen.
That is very deep, Troy. I'm not dismissing what you're saying. I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying. I'm still struggling to fully understand what you're saying. I understand the fact that you're saying whatever you call it, you know, whether it be God, whether it be Mother Nature, whether it be Gaia, whether it be the universe, whatever, I get it. I understand that. If I can paraphrase what I think you said, and you can correct me.
Yeah, sure.
If we all take the time to connect to the belief that we have, that we are all the same, and that this planet that we're on is our home, then we can all share in that wonder of the life that is created on this planet and the beauty therein. I know this sounds pretty deep and maybe to a lot of our audience, you know, like, you know, a bit out there, but stop and think about it. What I'm hearing from you, Troy, is if we all connect with each other, then we can live a little more peacefully. We can live a little more in love as opposed to in hate, which is what I'm seeing far too much of. I mean, am I off the mark?
No, very, just different words. You know, we all use different words, and you're definitely on a mark. And, you know, in the traditions of yoga, we, you know, there's this word that's thrown around now. It's called namaste. It comes from Indian heritage, right? And the word namaste, you know, we use it very gimmicky, but the word namaste means that the God or light in me acknowledges the God within you. And to me, I extend that to all living things. To use that word is to acknowledge that we are all God. And, you know, a cool story of when this really landed for me is that the very first night, I live in a forest and I lived in a treehouse for 6 years. But I make it very clear to people that I didn't grow up in a forest or a jungle. Like, I'm a city boy, right? I'm not like this bush survival man. So my first night in this treehouse alone was very challenging. And, you know, I was there alone. I could scream and no one would hear me. And you have all the noises and animals and creatures of the forest coming out. And I was so threatened. But there was a moment when I took a few breaths and I relaxed into it. And I realized that I felt threatened because I saw myself as separate. And as long as I saw myself as separate, I was a threat. Not only did I feel threatened, but I became a threat to everything else that was around me, right? Because I would do anything to protect my identity and myself. And in that moment, Robert, I saw these giant trees. I saw a moon glistening on the leaves of trees. I began to see all the magnificence around me, whereas before that, all I could feel was threatened and scared.
That's very, very deep, Troy. I hear you and I understand what you're saying. And
yeah,
I love that. All I can say is, wow. Let's move on to the next one, because as I said, I can sit at your feet and listen for hours, but let's move on to lesson number three, which, by the way, is probably one of my favorites. Lesson number three, forgiveness does not depend on an apology. How true is that?
Yeah, of course. And I've heard that before, and we say that before, but I don't think, you know, we say a lot of things, Robert, without really understanding them or breaking them down or realizing how they apply to our lives. So I like to try to break these things down. So I define forgiveness as believing someone can be better and do better, even when they don't realize how, or they don't even realize they need to be better. So it's important to me to acknowledge that every single individual is a product of their conditioning and their experiences. If their conditioning was negative, was full of fear, if they've never felt secure, then that breeds certain characteristics within someone. And it's important to really put a finger on that. Because once we see one another as a product of our conditioning and experiences, then it's almost like we have a responsibility to help someone dissolve or overcome negative conditioning and negative experiences. But we have to see beyond that conditioning and acknowledge that it is not below that conditioning is a child of God. And that is what we need to see. We need to see beyond that narrative to the child, the soul of God that lives within every individual. And I believe on some level, you know, I can't answer any questions. No one can. But on some level, we've come here as human beings in this experience to help one another move through all of this conditioning.
So true. So true. However, and while I absolutely agree with that, as a human being that is a product of the conditioning of the society I live in and that I've grown up in, as much as I want to forgive someone, I find it bloody hard to forgive them. There are people who, I agree with you, the people who have crossed me are not inherently evil people. So I agree with that, absolutely. I just find it really difficult to get to the point where I can just forgive them and help them overcome that. How would you suggest one goes about doing that?
Well, I'm trying not to jump ahead lessons here, but they're also interconnected, right? So I will say this, Robert. I'll give a little story and then I'll explain. Take a mosquito, for instance. If a mosquito bites you, someone might squash a mosquito and feel really attacked. And then I would ask you a question, well, are you mad at a mosquito? And they might say, well, yes, the mosquito bit me. And while the mosquito may have bit you intentionally, knowing it was going to bite you and knowing it was going to cause you harm, that's all a mosquito knows how to do. That's all it's ever been taught. So it wasn't a personal attack. It's not that the mosquito is out to get Robert. The mosquito just wants blood, it needs blood, and Robert happens to be in its way. So Robert gets bitten. So I think we're all just, sometimes we're casualties in this human experience in which we're all here to learn to love and try to make it all unfold. But I think what makes forgiveness really hard is when we attach to our personal identity, our body and name and form, because then anything that is done to us, we take as a personal attack. Even if somebody disagrees with us, we take it as a personal attack because our identity is so caught up in this individual narrative of body and form, you know?
That is so true. And I think that is how one handles it, by not taking it as a personal attack and understanding what you said. I will give lots of thought on that, and I commit to you, I will improve.
Yeah, I do think, Robert, that once we get our head around this, forgiveness is not an option. It's inevitable.
Yes. Yeah, I see that, yeah. And I understand that. Okay, let's go to lesson number 4, which again is a very powerful lesson, and I love it. But lesson number 4, hope and faith are not the same, and they do not carry the same power.
Yeah. I love all of these, actually. I had fun with it, Robert. I felt like I could have written about 100 lessons, and I really had to narrow them down. So we often refer to hope and faith as interchangeable, whether we realize it or not. We use them interchangeably. And they're not. Hope carries doubt, uncertainty, unknowing, a lack of confidence. This is what hope is. I'm not saying hope is a bad thing. Hope is beautiful, but we must know the difference. Faith, there's no room for doubt. There's no room for uncertainty. Faith is an absolute knowing. I was saying to someone the other day, faith is not religious. Faith does not belong to religion. It is not even tied to God. We believe in God, we believe in divinity because of faith. Faith has to come first. Faith is the knowing that we are part of a larger intelligence, that there is something happening. This is what faith is. So faith does not mean that we are clairvoyant or we can predict the future. That's not what faith is. Let me throw an example here. With hope, if I hope something can happen and it doesn't happen the way I wanted it to, then I feel defeated. You know, I feel down and I feel like a failure. But with faith now, if I have faith instead of hope, when things don't happen as I hoped or I intended, then I have faith that there is a larger intelligence at play, that there is something happening for me to learn, or that I am being used in a way, or that this experience is being used in a way to bring someone else growth and transformation, or myself growth and transformation. So with that faith, I am able to maybe retreat and reflect, and then realize that maybe there's another way to bring about what I want to bring about. Or maybe I need to go in a different direction altogether. But hope and faith are very different things. The way I describe it is like hope is dreaming. Hope creates these dreams. But hope can't get us there. Faith gets us there. And faith can manifest dreams larger than we ever.
That is wonderful. That is very deep too. Everything that you're saying, I have to go back and listen. And I'll actually say this to our audience, go back and listen to all this again, because just hearing it once might not be enough. I know it's not enough for me, but I do understand your definition of both, and I agree with them. They are two totally different things. And I think I have stopped hoping things happen. And in a business sense, for me anyway.
Yeah.
I don't hope that my strategies work. I have faith that they'll work because I've researched them. I know what's going to happen. I know how it should happen. And if it doesn't happen the way that it's planned, then I make an alteration.
Yeah.
You know, you can't just sit back and go, oh, that didn't work. Oh, I hope it will come back. It's not going to.
Yeah. And from an entrepreneurial standpoint too, Robert, it's like, I don't know if you can relate, but from a business standpoint, what I've found is that when you put one foot forward and keep one foot back, things don't generally happen.
You don't go anywhere.
You don't go anywhere. You have to commit with both feet, 100%.
And that is faith.
Yeah, you have to be willing to risk it all.
Yep.
And know that if it doesn't work out, there's something else.
Yep.
You're going to find your feet.
What a wonderful analogy to put it back into a business sense. Brilliant. Love it. All right, let's move to lesson number 5. So, Troy, lesson number 5, privilege is not a bad word.
Yeah. You know, I grew up, Robert, I always say I come from a place of privilege in so many ways. I can't even count my privilege, right? Sometimes when we think of privilege, we think of the larger labels of privilege. And I am light-skinned. I come from a well-off financial family. I am straight. I am physically well-able. I can go on and on and on about all the privilege, larger labels of privilege I benefit from. And we talk a lot about these larger labels of privilege. But let me say first that I grew up being ashamed of my privilege as a child and in young adolescence, right? I didn't want to tell people my name. I didn't want to tell people what neighborhood I lived in because I didn't want to be seen as separate or other or stush or spoiled. But what I realized is that if I did not own my privilege owned me. And what I mean by that is if I hid from my privilege, the only person it was going to benefit was me and my inner circles and my family. But if I could own my privilege and let go of the shame and guilt that might exist around privilege, I could then use my privilege to serve something greater than myself, to serve the larger collective. And to even sometimes dissolve the circumstances that created my privilege in the first place, or at least try to. And when I talk about privilege, I have to mention that the largest privilege in our world, the most powerful privilege in our world, and the one that is spoken of least of all, is the privilege of knowing what it means to be loved. And this comes back to conditioning and experiences, right? We take it for granted that everyone has someone to nurture them, to teach them right from wrong, to love them, to make them feel secure and safe. But that's not true at all. The majority of people have never known that. And it's important to own that privilege, if none others, because it's easier to look at someone and say, you should know better, do better. But what if they were never shown how to grow up in a life where you never feel safe or secure? You never felt like you were part of the collective. Then how can you actually care for the collective if you never felt like you were part?
That is so true in so many different ways. Very powerful stuff. Very powerful stuff. And you're right, privilege is not a bad word. As long as everybody understands that either they were privileged in certain areas or in their whole life, or they weren't. But it is something that we must own. It's something that we must say. I say the same as you. I was lucky enough to have food on the table, to have a roof over my head, to have clothes on my back that were provided to me by my family. That is a privilege. So I see how all your lessons fit into each other. And I'm just having a wonderful time. This is an awakening for me. Troy, thank you.
Beautiful. And I would say on that note, Robert, I know we have limited time and each one of these lessons could probably take an hour in itself.
I would love to do a podcast on each lesson, yes.
Yeah. But for listeners, like the fact that you are listening to this podcast is your privilege.
Yeah.
You know, a privilege is an advantage. And sometimes we get so caught up in the ways in which we are not privileged and not advantaged that we forget to look at the areas in our life in which we are privileged. And once we can own, that comes with a responsibility.
What an excellent lesson. What an excellent lesson. All right, Troy, I'm going to take a very quick break. We'd like to thank our affiliate partner, Audible. Audible is an amazing way to consume 10 lessons learned, books, and other podcasts, allowing you to build a library of knowledge all in one place. You can start your free 30-day trial by going to audibletrial.com/10lessonslearned. With Audible, you can find your favorite lesson while at home or on the go. Once again, that's audibletrial.com/10lessonslearned for a free 30-day trial. The link will be in the show notes. Our guest today is Troy Hadid. He's a yoga teacher, an author, a social entrepreneur, and we're proud and privileged to have him with us here today. So Troy, let's move on to lesson number 6. The most valuable currency on the planet is our support, attention, and love. Tell me about that.
Yeah, you know, we often think of currency, Robert, as money. And when we think of corruption, we think of politics, big business, millions and billions of dollars being shuffled around in exchange for services and support. And while I understand that, our relationships and our society produced the people who are now in corruption or in corrupt circles. And we have to ask the question, well, where did that come from? So what I like to point out is every day we participate in corruption, every single day, each one of us. Because the most valuable thing we can give each other is our attention, our support, and our love. And generally, if people don't act in a manner that pleases us, we withdraw our support, we withdraw our love. Or energetically, we give them a cold shoulder or a silent treatment. We do this in relationships, in marriages, in friendships, in a workplace. We do it everywhere. This is corruption. We are just trading emotional support. We are trading love. We are trading our attention. Imagine that as kids, we bribe our kids. Stop crying, I'll buy you ice cream. That is a bribe. That is corruption. Rather than explaining to a child, trying to understand why they are crying and trying to make them feel safe, we bribe them. And so I understand, right? If we grow up in a society where emotionally we're trading this currency of love and attention and support, all of a sudden, I'm an adult. I'm in politics, so I'm the head of this corporation. I have billions of dollars at my disposal. Why not? It's normal. I've been doing it my whole life. Society does it. So as much as we want to start to remove corruption from politics and big business and our world, we have to start to look at the currency we are trading every day in our lives.
That is incredibly confronting, Troy. And I'll speak on behalf of myself and probably the entire audience. That is incredibly confronting to sit back and say, well, I'm a good person, and then hear what you've just said and think, well, yeah, I've done that. And I'm not disagreeing with you. It is, I can see the definition there. I can understand that the trading of emotions, the trading of love, the trading of affection for something else, for obedience,
yeah,
most of the time is corruption. I can see that. I'm just stunned that I haven't seen that before. That is confronting.
Yeah. It's hard. And we all do it.
It's very hard.
We all do it. Even to this day, I do it. But again, you can only bring light to something when you see it and you start to look at it.
Well, we hope that we brought light to our audience. You definitely shone a spotlight to me. I will definitely be looking at the way I deal with that personally.
Yeah. And I just want to add, Robert, you know, some people might hear this and like feel like they can't challenge anyone or they can't. We can. It's called conversation. It's called being vulnerable and expressing how we feel or how something makes us feel.
Let's go to lesson number 7. Everybody fails, Everybody succeeds. And that's what makes us the same. Tell me about that.
You know, when I talk about this, I really talk about our humanness and allowing everyone else their humanness. And I think this is important because we often want to allow ourselves humanness and understand that we will make mistakes. Or for some people, maybe not. But we fail to allow everyone else their humanness as well and understand that we are all here. None of us are here because we have it figured out. If we had it figured out, we probably would not be in our physical body, to my understanding. And I think it's important to allow our humanness because I also connect this to accountability. We want more accountability in our world. We always talk about that. But yet we don't create a space in which people feel comfortable being accountable. So every time somebody is accountable and says, it was me, we hang them. We chastise them. We punish them. So who wants to be accountable? We're not making accountability accessible. To me, when someone steps into a place of accountability, it shows acknowledgement, it shows growth, it shows transformation. It should be applauded. You know, I could use an example here, Robert, is I have so much love and respect for Will Smith. As a human being, he has, at least from what I've known, always stepped into a place of accountability and he's always doing his work. And he made this massive mistake and he owned it. But yet we're still, up to this day, I still have so much people coming down on him for it. We all make these mistakes. All of us do. And there are times in our lives when all of us should have known better or did know better and we didn't do better. I'm saying, in a sense, all of it. Now, you know, there's a line, of course, right? Because it doesn't mean we need laws and regulations to hold our society together. If you are inflicting harm upon someone and you don't see that what you're doing is wrong, then you need that need, there's certain punishment or regulation that needs to be enforced.
Correct.
So I'm not saying we have a lawless society, but I am talking about relationships. And this refers to celebrities who make mistakes. Like, they're human too, right? And it's just so important. Like, I've made some mistakes. I've said some really foolish things.
Haven't we all?
Yeah. I would never want to be locked in a bar and labeled according to my mistake, right? I've owned it. I've grown from it. But somebody can't grow from their mistakes. Shame is any way to do that. Maybe a little bit of shame momentarily. But, you know, by shaming someone, it doesn't bring that growth. And when someone steps into light and acknowledges they were wrong, you know, that takes so much power. And we should applaud that.
Yes, absolutely.
I love to describe it, Robert, as think of the human experience as a curriculum. It's like school. And each one of us have come to school, but each one of us have a very individual curriculum to walk. And while we are navigating our own curriculum and learning our own lessons, we are also writing someone else's curriculum. So if I were to wrong you, Robert, that experience is for me to learn to overcome guilt and shame, but it's also to teach you forgiveness and empathy and understanding. So we're all so intertwined and our curriculums are so intertwined that while we're walking our own, our mistakes are actually setting a stage for someone else's growth.
What a wonderful way to put it. That's great. I really like that. So let's just move on to the next lesson, because again, every one of these, Troy, We can talk for hours. Lesson number 8. Stop asking the question, how can I change the world? Have the courage to ask the question, how am I changing the world?
Yeah, this one, I believe, comes from environmentalist Jane Goodall, which I think a lot of people are familiar with. And it really hit home for me, you know, because growing up and as a child, I always wondered, how can I change the world? How can I change the world? And that seems so big. And if we have 7-8 billion people on the planet asking, how can I change the world? We'll all be wondering, how can I change the world? You know, and asking a question, how am I changing the world now? It's acknowledging, you know, we have this saying in our culture now where people want to step into their power. Well, this is your power. Your power isn't only being courageous and stand up for what you believe in. Acknowledging your power is understanding that every word, every thought, and every action that we embody changes the world around us every single day. That we shift energy in the room, that we change perspectives, that we impact and affect people every single day in our lives. And we have to take responsibility for that and start to really look and ask you questions. What impact am I having on people? And, you know, I did a corporate keynote speech for a company recently, and their purpose statement was better choices for better world. And it's an amazing company. But I posed the question to them, a better world for who? Because you can make better choices to create a better world for your families and your inner circles while having a negative impact on the larger collective. So it's essential that we really begin to dig into this and look at the impact of our actions, our words, and our thoughts, because we change the world every single day. And if we had 8 billion people looking at how we change the world every day in our lives, that's how we actually change the world.
Beautiful. This resonates with me a lot because I came across this thinking very recently, in the last 3 or 4 years, since I started working for an organization that helps people who are living with disabilities. That's where I learned what real privilege was.
Yes.
But also where I learned my purpose. I've since left there. I am now CEO of another organization that helps people with type 1 diabetes.
Yeah.
So again, it's not about me. It's about how can I help the community? How can I make the world I live in a little better for everyone else?
Yeah.
Do I succeed? Sometimes yes, sometimes no. But again, as you said, that's what makes us all the same.
Yeah. And to link it back to the corporate world, Robert, here's what I've realized. Because I think all your listeners need to acknowledge their power. And I've recently begun speaking in this corporate environment. And from my very first speaking engagement, I realized how much of an influence corporate culture has on social culture.
Yes.
And for generations, corporate culture has always put profit above everything else.
Yes.
So no wonder it's impacted social culture in that way. But if we, and profit is important, I'm not living in la la land, right? Profit means sustainability, it's important. But we need to even out the scale. We need to put wellness and we need to look at there's certain things that should be put above profit. Things like social impact, things like wellness. What are we contributing? And because if we can begin that shift in our corporate environment, that shift is going to happen in our social world as well.
Agreed. Agreed. Let's hope that happens sooner rather than later, Troy.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to lesson number 9. Now, I've got to admit, 9 and 10 baffle me, so you're really going to have to explain these. So lesson number 9, cultivate a loving relationship with your mind.
Yeah.
Okay, what do you mean by that?
You know, it's a teaching, and it's by a yoga teacher called BK Iyengar. He's no longer in his body. But he used to say that the mind is king of everything. So right now behind me, some people may not be have a visual, but there's a wooden wall. And if I told you the color of that wall was white, you would probably tell me I'm crazy because it's actually like brown. But in reality, if I chose to believe that wall was white, then it was white. If I grew up believing that was the color white and was always told that was the color white, then you cannot change my mind unless I choose to believe different. The mind, Robert, is the most powerful thing we have. It changes our entire perception of the world. It changes our entire reality, right? If someone came into this call, or if you came into this call thinking I was a complete idiot and had no idea what I was saying or talking about, our conversation would be very different.
Yes.
Because you've already painted that narrative on me. And we label people with narratives. We label experiences with narratives. But we don't always understand how powerful that narrative is, because the mind creates our reality in every way. And, you know, recently, Robert, like up to 3 months ago, I spent a period of time in absolute darkness. And prior to that, I had spent a period in absolute silence, 10 days in silence. And I know what happens in the mind, and I knew how powerful the mind was. But in darkness, I experienced things I could not even possibly imagine. Like, I faced death. I never thought I would leave that room ever again. And it showed me how powerful the mind really is, because right now, I can see things around me. There's an aspect of reality and my perception of reality that can tell me that right now a missile is probably not going to fall on my house, right? A tree maybe, but not a missile. But in darkness, there's no perception of reality. In absolute darkness, you can't see anything and there's no one else around you. So your mind becomes 100% direct of your reality. And it gives you a glimpse as to how powerful the mind really is. So whether someone chooses to believe the world is a bad place, or chooses to believe someone is a bad person, or chooses to believe an experience or a narrative of their life, or chooses to believe they're sick and they're ill and they'll never get better, the things we say and we choose to believe, we are far more powerful than we realize. Mm. And we give those things so much more power when we choose to believe them.
So how do I cultivate a loving relationship with my mind then?
All right. So I describe a relationship with our mind like a marriage, but it's an eternal marriage. There's no separation and there's no divorce. It's you and your mind forever. Your mind is your ride or die. And like any relationship, Robert, for there to be a holistic, loving relationship, there must be intimacy. And intimacy is just spending time with your partner, trying to understand your partner. So this can resemble things like meditation, maybe. And it's so ironic because in our world today, someone could say, yeah, I'm spending a day alone, but yet they're on Netflix, they're on their devices, even reading books is not spending time alone.
Yep.
You're still with an external influence. Like, to spend time with your mind is to sit with your mind, look at what comes up and listen to it and try to understand where these emotions and where these thoughts come from. That is intimacy with your mind. And even if it's 3 to 5 minutes a day, might be how it begins. You just set your time on your phone, put it aside, and you sit with your mind and you look and listen to what your mind has to say.
I think that is wonderful advice. Everything that I've been researching on the different philosophies, as well as everything that we've heard about mindfulness, etc., all comes back to the fact that you have to understand yourself. And as you said, the most powerful part of yourself is your mind. Yeah. So get to know your mind. Love it. No, that's fantastic. Thank you, Troy. All right. Well, let's move to the 10th and penultimate lesson, because I've got one more question to ask you. But lesson number 10, this one, again, baffled me. Breathing is not something we do, but something that is done to us. I'm sorry to laugh at this, Troy, but I have no clue what the hell that means.
Yeah, I'm not surprised, Robert. Before I answer that, I will say I want to finish. I told you about that teaching of B.K. Iyengar, where he said mind is king of everything. But that's only half of the teaching. The full teaching says mind is king of everything, but breath is king of the mind. Okay. And the one thing that helps us tame our mind and create this intimacy with our mind is our breath. Our breath is the king of our mind. It's the king of our emotions. It's the king of our reality. So it's so important that people know and understand their breath. But I learned to breathe at 27 years old. And that was 3 years after I had been teaching yoga. So I know for a fact that most people live their entire lives and don't understand how breath works. And I will say this, because I understand this could sound like mumbo jumbo, but we put so much emphasis on what we eat, how much exercise we get. Even sleep is really important. But put this in perspective, we breathe 23,000 times a day, and we can't live more than 3 or 4 minutes without breathing. So what do you think has the most impact on our body of all? Breath is really important. And one of the first things any doctor should ask us is, how are you breathing? Because they might ask, are you stressed? But breath controls your stress. Breath can dissolve stress. Very first question should be, how are you breathing? So I'll get into it now, Robert. I've blabbed long enough. But the understanding that we don't actually breathe, breathing is something that is done to us, is the medical anatomy of breathing. This is not like some yoga, Eastern philosophy perspective. This is medicine, right? If I were to ask you, when you breathe, do you pull air into your body? You would probably tell me yes, as most listeners would. They would say, yes, when I inhale, I pull air into my body. Well, that's not actually accurate. Here's how breath works. And your listeners are smart, so I won't spend too much time on this. But think of your thoracic cavity, which is from your diaphragm up to your sternum, which is where the majority of breath happens, right? Think of that as a box. Inside that box has a set air pressure. When you expand the volume of that box, what happens to the air pressure? It goes down. Volume and air pressure are inversely related. If you increase the volume of a space, the air pressure inside of it decreases, right? So when I expand my ribcage and my diaphragm descends into my belly and my chest expands and my back body expands, these are all the dimensions of breathing. When I increase the volume of my thoracic cavity, the air pressure inside of me decreases. There's also a law of physics that says that gases move from high pressure to low pressure. This is not in question. So when I expand the volume of my thoracic cavity and the air pressure inside of me decreases, that means that the air pressure outside of me is higher than the air pressure inside of me. So there's that force. So I explain to people this way. There is an external force that breathes you, that pushes that air into you. All you have to do is create the space to receive it. And that might seem as insignificant, but it's not. It changes your relationship to breath. It also changes your relationship to everything and everyone around you, because the same force that breathes me, the same force that breathes you, even though you're on a different side of the world. And I also want to throw this in here, Robert, because it was very profound for me to learn that the word spirit, like Holy Spirit, actually comes from the Latin word spiritus, and that means to breathe. And it makes sense to me that there is some divine agency in our breath, because it is the one thing that connects every living being and every bit of creation on the planet. The air molecules inside of me right now possibly were inside of you, or will be inside of you at some point in your life. If I sit next to someone, we may not be genetically related or related by blood or related by opinion or perspective or ideology, but we are connected by air we breathe. Hence why the pandemic was such a big deal.
That's deep. I mean, the scientific part of it aside, which is also fascinating, the fact that, one, we're connected brings this full circle back to everything that we've talked about. But two, there's not enough discussion, knowledge, practice about breathing. Because you're right, it does reduce stress.
Yeah.
It does clear the mind. It clarifies your thoughts. I hear you. I'm with you on that. I think we should take some time to understand how we breathe and learn to breathe purposefully.
Intentionally.
Intentionally.
Yeah, I tell people intentional breathing is different from breathing. I think we take breath for granted, because as soon as we come out of the womb, it arrives. So we've been taught to believe that breath is automatic, and it is. Thank God it is. But there is a difference between breath being automatic and having a relationship and an intimacy with breath.
Yep.
Because when you create that intimacy with breath, you can now use that to alter emotional states.
It does work. So I strongly advise anybody listening and watching, make the time, test it out. Listen to Troy, he knows what he's talking about.
In a corporate world too, Robert, what I like to point out is that the physical body and the spiritual body, emotional body are all connected, right? Mm-hmm. But when I get stressed or I get anxiety, the physical muscles of my body contract and my breath gets very fast. So if my physical body is in a state of contraction, guess what? I can't expand my body to create space to receive breath, especially if I don't know how breath works. But if I have a relationship to my breath, I can use, all I need is two or three breaths. And I can use that to release the physical tension of my body and alter my emotional mental state.
You can absolutely do that. I can attest to that. Troy, this has been absolutely wonderful. I've had the time of my life talking to you. Let me finish up by asking you one question. What have you unlearned? What have you had to unlearn?
Well, I hesitate to say I have unlearned it, because I think I am still trying to unlearn it. And I think it's just, I might be unlearning it until the day I leave my body. And this might sound very esoteric and very woo-woo. I'm not woo-woo. I like to believe I'm very tangible and real life. But I am unlearning the narrative that this is my body. This is who I am. You know, from the day I was born, like all of us, I was told, this is my body and my name is Troy. And I've learned that's actually not true. That's not a narrative I abide to. Because I believe that when I leave my body, there is life after death. Whatever it is, I believe that this conversation energetically will live in the minds and hearts of your listeners long be after I leave my body. Which means that the energy in which I've contributed to the world will live forever. So in that way. And we all have people we love who have left their bodies, who live with us. They aren't dead. They aren't gone. They don't cease to exist. So even to put a more tangible point to it, if I go tomorrow and I change my name, am I still the person I am today? Yes, I just changed my name. Or if last year I was 300 pounds and I lost all this weight in a few years, am I still the same person? Yes. I've just grown in certain ways. So, and the problem with this narrative of I am my body and my name is Troy, what that does, Robert, is it makes us separate. And this is the narrative that our entire world is built on. So whether we are conscious of it or not, let me put a hammer and a nail in it here. As long as I believe I am my body and this is who I am saying that when I leave my body, I will no longer exist. And what I'm also doing is unconsciously maybe, every decision I make and every choice I make will be governed by my need for self-preservation. Because as long as I am my body, and this is all that I am, and I will cease to exist, I will do everything that I possibly can to preserve my identity and who I think I am. And as long as we identify with our individual form, Robert, it inhibits our ability to love one another. And the more we can move beyond this attachment and this individual narrative, is the closer we get to understanding unconditional love.
Troy, I can definitely say to you, that's the first time we have had that unlearned lesson on the show. It's hard for a lot of people to grasp what you're saying, simply because society still doesn't understand it. But as you said, we have very smart listeners and viewers, and I'm sure that you all heard what Troy said, and you know, some of you have taken it to heart. Some of you are nodding furiously and agreeing with it, and some of you are saying, what the hell was he talking about? I get that. Troy gets that.
Yeah.
And that's fine. That's okay. Rewind this, listen to it again, because this whole episode has been very deep. Troy, all I want to say is thank you. Thank you for making the time to be on the show today. Thank you for being with us and sharing those fantastic lessons with us.
Thank you, Robert. It's been a pleasure and an honor just to be here. And thank you for giving me space and opportunity to share.
Anytime. Where can our listeners find you?
Yeah, so they can find me at troyhaddy.com. That is my website. Yeah, and they can find me on Instagram. And if anybody interested in personal sessions or coaching or learning about yoga or public speaking or would love to have me as a guest wherever, whenever, or have any questions at all, they can find me there. And I would absolutely love to be a part of anything.
And we'll finish here today. You've been listening to 10 Lessons Learned. Our guest today is Troy Hadid, yoga teacher, social entrepreneur and author, coming to us all the way from Trinidad and Tobago today. This episode is supported, as always, by the Professional Development Forum. Please tell us what you think of today's lessons. Leave us a comment. Leave us a review. You can email us. You can send an email to podcast@10lessonslearned.com. That's podcast@10lessonslearned.com. And we'll get back to you. We'd love to know what you thought of Troy's lessons. We'd love to know what you think of the show and if you have any other ideas for us. Go ahead, hit that subscribe button and turn on your notification bell so you don't miss an episode of the only show on the internet that changes the world, one lesson at a time.